everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama,
yes. I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline, end zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Tom, took a few minutes of overtime, but the tide prevailed there in the end, right?
They did, man. This is the second game of the year that they deserve to lose. They should have lost at Arkansas if they'd had a better quarterback. They should have lost this ball game. They were out physical for the majority of this game. Lost the time of possession, lost field position, but they did find a way to win. You know, they did find a way to win. You know, a W is better than a loss, but they definitely better do some soul searching before this next ball game.
Yeah, I don't question that a bit. I was a little bit surprised looking at some of the stats. We only gained 315 yards. That's a low number relative to the rest of the season. But, you know, we outgained LSU. They only gained 259. On third downs, third down conversions, they converted 17. We converted 15. And I look back on the game, and I don't know when that happened. But I agree with you. The bottom line is the bottom line. The fact that we walk out of Death Valley, you know, with a win is, you know, they found a way to pull it out. There was nothing, you know, through three quarters, really through three and a half quarters. There was nothing to suggest that we had those two drives in us at the end, the one to bring it down and to tie it. And of course, the one in overtime. Nothing that we did really suggested that we were going to do that at the end of the game. But, you know, sometimes you'd rather be lucky than good. And sometimes, you know, like Stalling said, you know, you create your own luck. We had a plan. We stuck with it. And there at the end, it seemed to materialize and we won the game. So I think you just have to walk your way, walk out of the stadium, kind of tip your hat to, you know, the good graces of football and prepare for next week, right?
Yeah, and it's funny you say that about the plan. We'll have to spend some time talking about sticking to a plan here in a minute, because you know we talked about that on Saturday night. Sure. But I will first say that even though this game was miserable to look at, there wasn't a lot of first downs. You know, it's always enjoyable when both teams' punters have 9 punts on the game, right?
Yeah.
That's not the most fun to watch 18 punts, but. But what I did like, you know, as a former, you know, player at the high school level, don't get me wrong, I didn't get to play at the college level, but I just enjoyed the pure physical nature of these two teams and how they just collide. I mean, just the brutal physicality. This is football, as Saban said in his post-game conference. You know, this is the way he grew up playing football. This is, you know, put your big boy pants on. Get ready to take on a 240-pound blocker and then get ready to tackle 240-pound running back. And so, you know, in the age of the spread and the running quarterbacks and the 5 wide, I enjoy this kind of football. And so while I wish we would have done more on the field offensively, I enjoyed that part of this game as much as I did that 9-6 game a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And in its own way, it's a thing of beauty, right? And the defensive struggle, you know, part of, especially in recent years, part of the Alabama-LSU game is the 18 punts. And not that punts aren't, you know, not that they're glorious plays, but you can position field position. You can get a little bit of return game, a lot more strategy. And when you take your shots in a game like this. And so, you know, it's not always pretty, but, you know, you watch a game where both teams are scoring in the 40s and 50s and it's kind of a shootout and you're seeing crappy defense. Well, that's a bad game the other way. You know, there's a little bit of balance where you want to see some defense, some offense. And this game, probably a couple more punts than we would have wanted, would have liked to have seen some more production. But some of the things that we did on offense were really magnificent. And why don't you jump us into, I know you want to talk about the game plan. Start there or start somewhere else. Take us into the offensive discussion.
Yeah, I mean, early in the game, it was very frustrating how many times we were throwing the ball. You know, we would have a first down carry for 7 yards. We'd be setting up in a second and three. We pass the ball, third and three, we pass the ball, and now it's time for one of our 9 punts. And Saban gave you and I a nugget and all the listeners at the halftimes, you know, going in the locker room, when he talked about, you know, we can move the ball on them. We just need to get back to doing what we do. Well, they didn't get back to doing what they do. And he said after the game that they thought they were going to get press man. They had, you know, they had runs called. Blake had the ability to audible to some go routes and change the play at the line of scrimmage if he saw certain press coverage from the cornerbacks. And so they did it time after time after time, and it didn't work time after time after time. And so we saw him drop back 46 times. That is more than he dropped back in 2 other SEC games this year combined.
Sure.
And so it was just a bad game plan. I'll say this way. Going into the game thinking that if they give us press man, we're going to put the game in our throwing quarterback hands to begin with, in my opinion, is not a good strategy. So I don't even understand in the week ahead of time why they even came up with this, that we're going to check to a pass play if he sees certain coverage. It's not like he's a drop back passing quarterback. So I don't understand why we didn't come into this game running the ball 40, 45 times, which is what we do, and then set up the play action pass.
Well, I don't mind out of hand if you see a mismatch, altering the play to take advantage of it. I don't mind scheming to a perceived deficiency of the defense. Those are things that we've asked for years. Let's tailor our offense. Or let's run plays on offense based on what the defense is doing, not just, you know, what's next on the script. LSU is uniquely talented. We've done that checkout in games before. You know, Kenyon Drake's touchdown to open the game against Florida was a check. We've had checks, you know, all throughout the season, and we've had great success with them. There's a little bit of credit that I want to give to LSU just being a superior talented team. They could give the look that we wanted and play the defense over that look. And I think that's significant. One of the things that I really took away, and, you know, we saw Saban last year at halftime of the LSU game in Tuscaloosa, and he said, we just need to run the ball in the second half. And guess what? That's exactly what we did. It was just a, you know, 80% run in the second half. And so at halftime of this game, he says, you know, what we're doing is we're wasting plays. And he was very, you know, dramatic and emphasized, you know, the wasting of plays. He said the same thing after the game, too, that he thought that we could move the ball on the ground. We were doing this check on paper. It's a good plan. It's a good strategy. He agreed with that. But it netted out that we were wasting plays. And the primary takeaway that I have there is that we didn't change course. Even though that was Saban's opinion, we didn't change course from the first half to the second half. And we can argue sort of the merits of changing the course. But here's the nugget that I want to pinpoint. Clearly, for whatever talk, whatever articles have been written, clearly Lane Kiffin is calling the plays. They're not being run through Saban. They're not check with me plays. Lane Kiffin is calling those plays. If Saban were to have wanted to jump in, we would have run the ball. Last year being a prime example. And so I think Kiffin has more autonomy, good, bad, or indifferent. The observation is that he has more autonomy in what we run than prior offensive coordinators. And I just find that very interesting.
Well, and I think that's something to do with, you know, the pedigree that he comes with when he comes to Alabama, or the perceived pedigree. You know, there are people that'll have differences of opinions on what he does bring to the table.
Sure.
I think he's very good at bringing a lot of people involved, getting a lot of people involved in the offensive game plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes it can be overdone. And so you and I even made a comment getting to watch this game together in person, how it almost seemed like there's been so much criticism about Amari Cooper getting, you know, 80% of the throws his way.
Sure.
That they tried to compensate the other direction and see how many other guys they could get worked into the game. And I don't know if that took away from their focus on what we do best. Because, like, you know, I had a buddy of mine I was talking to yesterday who made a comment. He's like, man, he's like, you know, we're just too much in the shotgun. I was like, you know, I agree with you. He said, we need to be back under center more. I mean, one of our best strengths is the play action pass. And the way that play action pass works is because you've pounded them for two or three quarters and now you've set them up. Well, we're not even running the play action pass. We're just in the shotgun doing some zone read play action, if best. But we're predominantly just throwing in the shotgun. And we're not even rolling him out in the flats where he's comfortable. I mean, how many times do you think we rolled him out in this ball game? Two or three?
Yeah, we didn't roll him out. That, you know, it was more of those quick hit from the line of scrimmage, you know, checkdowns that we were running. Yeah, we didn't roll them out a lot. We didn't establish the run as much as I would have liked. But I'll say this, though, and I will be alone on this island, and that's fine. You and I watched the game, and I commented several times during the first half that I thought we were just inches away from really separating ourselves. You know, we were a dropped pass here or just 2 inches of separation there to completing some of these passes. I am not going to blame the officials. There were good and bad calls both ways. I think in this game it was a wash, but there were some pass interference penalties. You know, DeAndre would have caught a touchdown on a fade if his hand wasn't being held by the defender. And so, again, that's just an example. But I thought through the first half that, man, we were just so close to opening this ball game up. It felt like we had the potential to just start clicking and running an offense similar to, you know, like we did against Florida. Maybe not A&M, but Florida or the first half against Tennessee, that we were just that close to really putting some points on the board. It never happened, but that's how I felt through the first half. Now, getting into the second half is a whole different ballgame because the third quarter, and I want to talk about this when we get to defense, but the third quarter was the LSU show. You know, we had 2-3 and outs. We held the ball for, you know, just over 2 minutes, and they had the ball the whole rest of the quarter. At that point, the tone kind of changed a little bit. I would have liked to have seen us run more in those possessions, not so much to move the ball, you know, down the field, but just to eat some clock so our defense could rest. But
oh, sure, you know,
that starts to be a different story. Again, I think we were close to opening the game up, and so there's part of what we did that I really, really like. I would be very happy taking, you know, 8 or 10 of those passes, though, and then putting them back in the run ledger. I would like to have seen that. And I know you would pick a bigger number.
Much bigger number.
And so directionally, we'd both like to see more run. You would move over more into that bucket than me. But, yeah, I would have liked to have seen more run, you know, establishing that early in the game. I do think that can make the passing more effective. You know, kind of one can feed off the other. I do think if we had hit some of these passes that we were just off by inches, though, that would have opened up the running game as well. And so, you know, if we had some of those three and outs, hit a couple of those passes, and now we get 6, 7, 8, 9 play drives, I think we do start to see more of the run. So I think we tried to pass to set up the run, but we didn't complete the pass.
But you don't pass to set up the run with a former running back who's a running quarterback. I'm sick of the dink and dunking. Okay, that's the best way I can say it.
Sure.
The Dinkin and Duncan is getting old. And Gary Danielson put up that great chart, almost like basketball when you show the missed shots. And I loved it when he showed all the black X's of all the missed passes. And he said, they haven't completed a pass over 10 yards. And that was in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through the third quarter, the beginning fourth quarter, he showed it again. They still haven't completed a pass over 10 yards. How are you going to back up the defense when you're just dropping balls that short? And I'm sorry, Blake Sims has not shown that he can consistently connect on passes greater than 10 yards. He hasn't shown that he can do it. And so I will tell you real quick that when you have a quarterback like that, you do not do the pass to set up the run. I think Lane Kiffin is thinking he has got a, you know, former USC quarterback with a rifle arm, so I'm going to do the pass to set up the run. You know who you've got, man. You recruited this kid. And so my biggest problem is that you come into the third quarter, they get the ball. They have a long drive. They eat up time on the clock. They get a field goal. Okay, they tie the game. This goes back to your point. 12-play drive, 7 minutes off the clock. Based on what Saban had told us, we should have come out there and we should have done what we do. So on first down, we rush T.J. Yeldon. He gets 2 yards. Second and eight, we throw the ball to Amari Cooper. He gets 7 yards, David. It's third and one. And oh, by the way, we're starting off at the 35-yard line. So it's third and one at our 44-yard line. And what do? We pass. Alabama does not pass on third and one from their 44-yard line. That is not the identity of the University of Alabama. If we run the ball on third and one there, that is what we do. And next thing you know, they wouldn't have had the ball for 14 minutes in the third quarter.
Yeah, I feel like we're arguing against each other but making the same point. I would, situationally, 8 or 10, you know, maybe 12 of those passes, I would not have allowed the check down. It's third and one. We're not going to check that down. We're gonna run in that situation. So especially when you consider that LSU came into the game ranked number 63 nationally, stopping the run. Let's take the opportunities to check down when they present because we have had success doing that. Let's also recognize that this is a defense that's better than what we've played before. They're good at the press coverage where, you know, other teams do not play it a lot and certainly don't play it as effectively. It is part and parcel of what LSU does. It's part of who they are. And so when we find that we're not hitting on that, let's go back to this run because we know, or at least we have a confidence there that that we can make hay. We should have operated from the confidence of we think that we can do both against this team, and so let's do both against these team. And I think we just got happy, checking out, and that never really materialized. Now, I'll say this though about Blake: when it came push came to shove, I think he showed a great amount of poise, a great amount of leadership, took control of the huddle. And, we said we haven't completed passes over, 10 or 12 yards, but he completed two of those on the drive to set up the field goal. And then, of course, the play in overtime, or the plays in overtime as well. So we went the whole game. It kind of goes back to we didn't show anything that would suggest that we were capable of doing what we did at the end, but we did what we did at the end. And I'm going to give a lot of credit to the quarterback for leading the team in that situation.
Oh, people are criticizing the LSU defense for playing prevent there. I would have played prevent too, because y'all had not shown me anything that prevent's not going to work, right? Keep everything in front of me because you haven't shown me anything yet. And so, your comment about the number of passes, I wonder if it's a situation where they gave Blake Sims too much autonomy. Okay. And so what I mean is when you talk about the number of pass plays, and I agree with you, how many times was AJ McCarron, who won 3 national championships as quarterback, how many times did we talk about his final stat line was 20 completions, 30 passes for 220 yards, right? Or 250 yards. It wasn't anything sexy, but it was 30 dropbacks. And so, yeah, he dropped back about 16 times too much. And so I just think early in the game, they gave him too much autonomy to check out of plays. Now, I think at the end of the game, the reason he looked so good is because it was a no-huddle, 2-minute offense, and he's done that 1,000 times in the few months he's been quarterback. And so that repetition, I think he's very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And so I even said to you during the game, I said, I wonder why we didn't try to run 2-minute offense sometime earlier in the game. just to change up the rhythm, right? Change up the approach, change up the, you know, change up how we're doing things, because what we were doing was not working. I wish we'd have shown some 2-minute offense earlier in the ball game.
Sure. No, I don't dispute that. I'm fine with that. Take us somewhere else. Where you want to go? Where you want to go next on offense? I know you want to unleash on, you know, giving us some Brandon Green love. We can talk about Amari. Take us to our next topic.
Man, let's start with Amari Cooper. He obviously had a couple drops on some good passes by Blake Sims that would have been first downs in the ball game. He had, you know, he dropped a couple balls, but you and I specifically talked about a 1/3 down play that he made on the sideline. And I'm going to let you set this up for the listeners because you enjoyed breaking it down during the game. But talk a little bit about that sideline pass route that he ran.
Well, you know, there were a couple of plays that Amari made that we just, you know, we just did the DVR back and forth and watched them several times. He was in tight coverage, you know, I had tight coverage on him on the sideline. And, you know, I wish we had a video sort of a companion to go with what we're talking about here. But he turned his back to the sideline to, you know, facing back towards Sims. And with his inside hand, he gave just a little nudge in between the arms, in between the shoulder pads of the defender, just gave a little bit of nudge, a little bit of push, and then spun to the outside and caught the ball almost kind of over his shoulder. And so he created just, you know, 2 inches of separation with a push. It wasn't like a Michael Irvin push off or something, but it was, you know, just a little bit of a nudge push followed by a quick turn. And created the separation. It was a beautiful pass that Blake made to put it in a very small, tight window. And I think we'd kind of both agree there that was evidence of what Blake can do with that play. But it was, you know, we kidded. The play was on the sideline, and you know, I kind of kidded. Well, who does that remind you of? And I was thinking Kevin Norwood, you know, successful on the sideline against LSU. But you went straight to Chris Carter, you know, NFL Hall of Famer, right, where he made just little, very subtle plays like that. And we talked about, you know, this is a play that the GMs and the scouts, when they really start looking at brass tacks on players, they're going to say, you know what, that's an NFL-caliber push-off. That's an NFL-caliber play where he is in very tight coverage along the sidelines and is able to use a little bit of craftiness and his body to create the necessary separation to catch a ball. That was just a phenomenal play.
No, it was, man. You know, before we talk about Brandon Green, let's spend a couple minutes talking about the offensive line. I just wanted to mention that, you know, I thought that the freshman came in with his banged up ankle. And I thought Cam played pretty well. You know, he had that false start at the beginning of the game that the ref missed. But he had to go up against, you know, some talented defensive ends for, you know, LSU and Rasko and Hunter. And I thought that he played well. I also thought that Austin Shepherd showed some good grit. He got hurt early, as you and I saw on that play in the flats to the right. And he was hobbling pretty good on his knee in the first quarter. But he didn't come out of the game. I thought we were going to see Grant Hill, and he stayed in there and sucked it up. And so I just wanted to give kudos to the offensive line, because we didn't see any backups come in the game. The five that started the game, you know, made it through the whole ball game.
Yeah, they really did. And I thought they acquitted themselves well. I think, and again, I don't want to go back to we should have run the ball more, but I think the offensive line could have played even better than they did had they been given the opportunity to really prove themselves. When you run a lot of quick outs to the sideline, you can do that a lot of times to help your offensive line. And so maybe that was part of what we were thinking with a couple of tackles that were dinged. And so that's a fair thought. But I would have liked to have seen them plow the ball, you know, get some drive blocking. I think that again, I think we would have had success there. But yeah, I agree with you. Kind of hats off to the offensive line. And, you know, let's talk about, I guess, a former big ugly in the way of Brandon Green. You've been asking for him for weeks. We even got a shout out on Facebook, you know, podcast guys, how you like Brandon Green now, because, you know, people know that you've been calling for him. So I'm just going to sit back and light a cigar and listen to you pontificate on Brandon Green here.
Man, everybody, you know, most of these guys listening know who he is. You know, these are the kind of guys you need in the football program. These are the kind of guys that are the unheralded guys. They're the practice guys. You don't see them on Saturdays for the most part. And so this is a guy that's been tossed around, right? I mean, this is a guy that came in with the pub at offensive line. Then he got moved to tight end. Then there was rumors that he was going to leave the program. Next thing you know, he's back at tight end, but he's third on the depth chart. Well, this is a guy that has got skills. I mean, this is a guy that's a, you know, 300-plus pound guy who looks the part of a tackle, who, you know, gets called on to come in a crucial situation in a great play call by Lane Kiffin, okay? So as much as Lane Kiffin frustrated me with his dink and dunking, this was an awesome play call. This is the kind of crap that you and I love to focus in on. And so you take Cam Robinson and you put him over here in the slot to the right, and the cornerback is pointing to him like, guys, who is he? What is he doing over here? And you got him jumping up and down like he's doing jumping jacks toward Blake. And you got Brandon Green lined up as an eligible tight end at left tackle spot. And just a great formation. And he runs down the hash where we want the – you know, I've been calling for tight end down the hash all year, and I didn't think it was going to be Brandon Green. That's not who I envisioned.
Well, you got the mother load on this play, right? Because you were like, where's Brandon Green? All day you were like, where's Brandon Green? Where's Brandon Green? All season you've been asking for Brandon Green. All season you've been asking for the tight end down the hash. Brandon Green lined up on the line of scrimmage as if he's going to block, and he runs down the hash to catch a pass. I mean, you were like on a sugar rush, right?
Dude, it was awesome, man. And then Blake put the ball, to Blake's credit. Blake hit him in stride. He threw the ball in a great spot for a big man to catch it. But I'm going to tell you, if you go line up every 300-pound guy that is a lineman, offensive lineman in college football, and you do that same go route, nobody is going to look as cool as he did catching that ball. I'm sorry. The dude looked agile. He looked quick. He caught the ball with his hands, not his body like you're taught to do. And then the boy went toward the goal line. If the boy would have just lowered his head and just let that guy ride on his back in the end zone, he would have got him a touchdown.
Yeah, he was very close to getting a touchdown. I think that's the offensive lineman coming at him where, you know, he's not his mentality is not to run through someone. It's more to stand him up. And so the way he hit and then kind of let the DBs, and I think it took three or four of them to finally bring him down. But I think if he had, you know, a little more experience catching the ball and, you know, experience with the ball in his hand where you just cradle it, and you lower your shoulder and, you know, launch yourself into the end zone, I think you probably would have gotten in. But, yeah, you got to be pleased with the kid to make a play like that. And I love that, you know, not only just the design of the play where you've got the tackle, Cameron Robinson out wide and you know, and he's on the line of scrimmage, and so he's covered up. So he is not even an eligible receiver. And then he steps back, you know, as if, you know, hey, I'm open, give me the ball. That's going to draw some attention. You've got three vertical routes going on, and so that's going to stress the defense, get the DBs kind of cleared out. And then you've got the, you know, lined up at the tackle position. He's just a tackle eligible. You've got the right tight end running that, because there's the whole psychology of, well, he's always kind of been a tight end, and he's always kind of been a tackle, and he's been kind of flip-flop back and forth, and so now he's lined up at tackle. You're not expecting him to do something. And what's funny, and we looked at this a number of times as well, you know, the defensive end or linebacker that's on him, like, pirouettes out of the way because he doesn't want to be run blocked by Brandon Green. And Brandon Green's not coming to block you. He's releasing down the line of scrimmage. And by the time the defender realizes, whoa, he wasn't coming for me, he's running a route, you've got those 2 yards of separation, and that's all the big man needed.
Oh, sure. And you know, when he caught the ball and proceeded to get bull rushed by three guys hanging on for dear life, they were all trying to strip the ball.
Sure.
And so here's another thing that took a lot of composure on his part, to have the awareness to put both hands on the football and say, you're not ripping this out of my dead arms.
Right.
Just because how many linemen, you know, try to pick up a fumble, right, and they lose the ball? And so I give him as much credit for the awareness of, okay, I'm not going to score a touchdown, but they're going to get me down here at the 5-yard line.
Yeah, and that speaks to he's a converted, you know, tackle. I get it, but he is a tight end, and so he spends time with the tight ends, and you know, he practices, you know, catching the passes, and so, you know, he doesn't have his hands all, you know, crazy taped up, and all his fingers are broken, you know, this point in the season. You know, he showed some very soft mitts, and he was able to wrap that ball up. So, yeah, that was a very impressive play. And I just like the creativity that we demonstrated there. I think the team was surprised when we called the play, but, you know, they, you know, it apparently it's been working well during practice. And so, yeah, that was fun to see. And it's a kind of a peek at, yeah, I wonder what else we've got up our sleeves in situations like that. So,
well, it makes you wonder if, you know, if this game would have gone the way we expected it, right? A 2-touchdown victory. I mean, last year we won 38-17.
Right.
You know, we didn't expect the game to be this close. You wonder if that play was, you know, out there for, this is our top go-to play. You know, it's going to be used against LSU or Mississippi State or Auburn.
Right.
It makes you wonder if you'd have seen that play against Mississippi State.
Yeah, we've got one shot at this, right?
Yes.
And we're gonna use it when we need it. And, you know, and in what perfect time to use it, first play of an overtime.
No, absolutely. I also want to talk real quick after that play. You know, Leon Brown comes in there, and he cleans up Kwon Alexander, one of the middle linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
Unnecessary. Was you know, Alexander wasn't even near the play, and he proceeds to clear him out. He gets a penalty, backs us up. Now it's second and long, and on the very next play, you know, we've got to call Derek Alexander's number, and because TJ Yeldon is hurt at this point. And so on the very next play, and what should have been first and goal at the 1-yard line,
right,
is first and goal at the 15. And so the very next play call is Derrick Henry rushing to the left, and he shows the physicality that we had been asking for all ball game.
Yep.
And he runs very physical and gets 8 yards, David, and gets to the 7. And so now we're 2nd and 2 at the 7. That got us back into where we needed to be to get that touchdown.
Right. Absolutely.
So I just wanted to, that was a huge thing for us that I'm so happy that the Alabama coaching staff there went to a run, is,
yes,
I guess is what I'm trying to say, as opposed to throwing the ball first and goal at the 15.
Right. Right.
What else on offense jumped out at you?
I'm ready to go to mini game ball on offense, unless you've got something.
No, man. You should let me take your mini game ball, put it with my mini game ball, because, you know, this guy is too big for just one mini game ball. But there is no other mini game ball besides Brandon Green. I mean, that is his first catch as a collegiate football player. It will probably be his last catch as a collegiate football player. And just so happy for this kid that he was able to do it in Death Valley, and we were able to give them loss number 5 under the big lights.
Well, I tell you what, I love me some Brandon Green, and I certainly enjoyed that play. But I'm going a little different direction on the mini game ball. I'm giving it to a player that we know by name, but what he did was the small stuff, the little things, do the little things. It was the little thing that is winning him the mini game ball. We went through this with very little mention of DeAndre White, and of course his spectacular catch, you know, for the touchdown in overtime. You know, you just can't argue with that. But what what was beautiful on that play design was Christian Jones. And so Christian Jones is getting my mini game ball. They lined up. One is the outside receiver, one in the slot. They ran a little X pattern. And Christian, and it is almost reminiscent of the Notre Dame game against Florida State, where clearly they ran a pick, and the wide receiver was, you know, drive blocking, and so you have to throw that flag. But Christian Jones runs, and so the defensive backs have to cross as well. He runs, he projects where Dwight's man's going to be, and doesn't put his hands on him necessarily, but there's a little bit of a bump, slows the defender down while he runs around sort of the underneath garbage. Christian turns as if he is trying to make a play for the ball, and so he sells it. And so rather than getting a flag and just running it sloppy like Notre Dame does, he sells it, which creates the separation for DeAndre. So I'm giving my mini game ball for him doing his job in such a way that he's not flagged.
No, that's a great call. And I also want to mention on Christian Jones that we said a few weeks ago that, you know, is he pressing it on the return game because his number's not getting called on the offensive side of the ball? Well, that catch he made in overtime where he had to catch that ball and get his hands underneath that ball when it was, you know,
down
the ground.
Yes.
Guess what? LSU's player missed it three times doing that.
Yep.
And so that was another critical play that he made. And so I'm glad to see it for the senior.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was a phenomenal catch. I'm glad you called that out. Well, let's flip the field. Talk to us about defense.
You know, at first glance, you know, LSU's old school, man. They're the fullback. They're the two tight ends, sometimes three tight ends. And they're just the pounded at you. And so, you know, you look at the stat sheet and you say, oh, my gosh, they rushed for 183 yards. What are we doing? This is not Alabama defense. Well, guys, they got a huge offensive line. They got a 245-pound tight end. They got a 250-pound running back. Yeah, they rushed it 183 yards. But it was on 56 battering ram shots.
Yep.
So when you look at it that way, it looks a little different.
Sure.
So first of all, that's 3 yards a carry against a team that is built to wear teams out in the fourth quarter. Gary Danielson called it best. He said, this is their MO. They've told me that they wait for the fourth quarter so they can do this. Well, guess what? I sat there and didn't have the faith in the fourth quarter and thought two or three times after some of those 9 punts of ours that the game was over.
Yep.
Because they got the ball with 6 minutes left or 7 minutes left in the game, and then 5 minutes left in the game, and then 3 minutes left in the game. And it was all really good field position, David.
Sure.
And I was like, man, we've been on the field for 30 plays in the third quarter. This defense has got to be wore out. You know what? We still found a way to make a play. Did they drop some passes that could have been first downs? Sure they did. They shouldn't have thrown it to who they did, but that's their problem. But on the running plays, we found a way to stand up and take on another battering ram. And so kudos to this defense.
Well, I'll tell you what, in my book, and I'm just going to pile on to what you just said there. In my book, the stat of the game is zero. And here's what I mean by that. In the third quarter, LSU possessed the ball 12 minutes and 32 seconds. It's a 15-minute quarter, right? They had one. There were four possessions. We had two that were three and out punts. So we held the ball just not even 2.5 minutes. They had a 13 play drive that went 40 yards, and this one kind of bled into the early part of the fourth quarter. But they had an 11 play drive for 40 yards. So in sort of in the context of the third quarter, they had 24 plays that they ran.
Hey, let me pause you a quick second. Listen to what you just said, man. How often is that? 24 plays and they only went 80 yards.
Well, right. And so that's a lot of effort being expended. That's a lot of battering ram, like you said, and that's a lot of tenacity on the defense. Because, Tommy, here's where I'm going. They possess the ball 12 and a half minutes. They have two, you know, drives of substance, 13 plays and 11 plays, and they get 0 points to show for it. And their whole MO, like Danielson said, is to cash in on those kind of drives. And they were unable, and if they had cashed in on those drives, they win the game. And they were unable to cash in on those drives. They were unable to cash in. You know, they got a field goal in the fourth quarter. That's all they had to show for all of that battering ram effort. And so 0 points allowed by the Alabama defense in the third quarter, to me, is the stat of the game.
Well, it is. They were able, you know, LSU was able to get that one field goal to tie it up. But then they were able, you know, but then on that next drive, we were able to hold them to a punt, which was huge, and keep the Alabama, you know, team in this game, with them only able to get in the one field goal to go into the fourth quarter, tied up 10-all. And then, you know, when we fumbled the ball and with a minute left in the game, you know, they had just shown the video, right, of all the heartbreaking ways that we had lost these games, right?
Yep.
I mean, John Parker Wilson fumbled the ball. Spencer Pennington, remember that name,
fumbled the ball. Yep.
You know, we had the how many times have we seen fumbles deep in our territory in this, you know, in this past decade, and games have not gone our way in that regard. And so for them to buck up at the end of the game with a minute left and hold them to a field goal is huge. So to your point, they gave up one field goal in the third quarter and one field goal in the fourth quarter, and that was it. And LSU had 82 plays. Let me also point out that, you know, this defense, and I know you want to touch on this here in just a second, but they had 82 plays and only gave up 256 yards.
Yep.
Now, unfortunately, in the past few weeks, they've gone from averaging about 55 yard plays against them. Arkansas, they went up to 79. Texas A&M was 55. Tennessee, they jumped back up to 79, and now LSU 82. So it also puts an exclamation point that three of the past four games now, the defense has had to be on the field for right at 80 plays. And they still came through like they did. So talk to the listeners about what that means going forward here.
Well, yeah, you're definitely reading my mail on this. You know, 2 years ago when we played LSU and we won the game on T.J. Yeldon's, you know, freshman T.J. Yeldon's play, we were averaging defensive snaps going into that LSU game, 53 snaps per game. And we played 88 defensive snaps against that LSU team that night. That was a close back and forth game, and so those were starter snaps. There were rotation, but those were your top tier guys. And so we ended up playing more than a half of an extra ball game. You know, the differentials there is 35, right? And so we'd been averaging 53, and you add on an extra 35 plays with your starters. You've played an extra half of a football with your starters, and we proceed that next week to lose to Texas A&M. You know, Johnny Manziel in Tuscaloosa, and you know the concept was, or my theory was, is because we were just so gassed. It was like we had played six overtimes. And, you know, teams that do that typically struggle that next week. And so, you know, we talked about it. I shouldn't have told you what I wanted to do because you went and did it. But, you know, what were we averaging snap-wise before the LSU game versus, you know, what we did against LSU? And so we were averaging 62. So that's a bigger number than the 53. The differential's not as stark. So that's good, I guess. But we've been averaging 62 defensive snaps per game, and we did, you know, 82 in this game, so 20 additional. You know, we did have the two games, you know, Arkansas and Tennessee, I guess back to back, in which or nearly back to back, in which we ran 79 plays, and those would have been starter level, you know, snaps as well. So maybe I don't feel as bad as I did, you know, a couple of years ago. But that's something we have to take into account. And, you know, you and I were still watching the post game, and I said, you know, everyone gets an ice bath. Everyone get off the field and go get an ice bath. Everyone just, you know, let's start the recoup for next week now. And, you know, hopefully we're not still hearing about all these plays as we get into, you know, Wednesday and Thursday. Let's just turn the page and move forward, because we've still got a lot of opportunity. This team still has a tremendous amount of opportunity. So we just not need to get too caught up in this win, because we don't want this win to cost us the next game, kind of like I feel it did a couple of years ago.
No, absolutely. What else jumped out at you on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I've got you know, maybe four just kind of, you know, quick hit topics. Let me just throw them out there, and then you can react to the ones that you're intrigued by. You know, Reggie Ragland had his best day, 13 tackles. And then after the game, you revealed, oh, we're learning bad news about Ragland. He played the game with a broken hand. And I said, well, you tell me where the bad news is on that, because he had his best day with a broken hand. So, you know, maybe I need to go slam a door on my hand or something, because – you know, if he can replicate that performance, you know, hand or not, then you know, it's evidence that he continues to get better and better. Eddie Jackson with his interception and his colorful quote that he on the sideline said three different times to three different people about pushing down the receiver, and the colorfully way in which he said it that we will not repeat. But it's there.
And he was very proud to say he had pushed down the receiver and was able to get away with it.
And the flavor with which he did that is something that we could not get away with. And
so real quick, you talked about Amari Cooper, right? And if it was an NFL way to get separation, is this the NFL way that a cornerback should push a wide receiver down and do it discreetly?
No, I think that, no, I don't think so. I think that I think the receiver legitimately slipped. I think that if Eddie Jackson had not touched him, he probably still would have slipped. I think Eddie Jackson is taking credit for something that maybe he didn't necessarily do. It's just fun to go back and kind of brag about it.
He had a hand on him. We don't know how much the force was, but I think he could have possibly got an assist on that one.
Well, I don't know, but but it, you know, he said something, and you were like, he said this,
yes,
and then I said, no, he didn't.
This again,
and so we proceeded to rewind it, and clearly enough, he did, and you won't catch us saying that, but if you want to go back and look at that, you know, I would encourage it.
It was, you know, funny.
It was funny.
Come on, it was funny.
He was very proud of it. The fact that he said it three different times to three different people, he was very proud that he had pushed that fella down.
Yes, that he had pushed that fella down. Yes.
And then so Jaron Reed had a big day. And then when we talk about Jaron Reed, I want to talk about Brandon Ivory, because we were both – look, we weren't surprised to see Brandon Ivory in the middle, because it's a big body game. We know that we're going to play, you know, Darren Lake – you know, got as many snaps as he's seen all season. Brandon Ivory, you could probably say the same. And against LSU, you know that the big bodies are going to get the snaps. I was surprised, and I think you were as well, that Brandon started at the nose instead of spelled Jaron Reed at the nose. And so, you
well,
know, any of those topics
that.
you can kind of play with. But any of those topics, those are some things that I saw on defense.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You know, he did get the start at nose, but Jaron Reed and A'shaun Robinson started next to him. And so the stat line shows it as a 3-4 look, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it shows A'shaun and Brandon Ivory and Jaron Reed. So what's interesting about that is those three guys have been rotating in two positions.
Yes.
And so we just saw all three of them in this game. And so I went back because I was curious. It's Brandon Ivory. It's his third start of the season. He started against Florida Atlantic in game two, and he started against Arkansas. So this was his third start of the year. So I think it has everything to do with what you said as far as, you know, what we were expecting to get. I will say that when Jaron Reed would instead of a 3-4 look, when we were showing a four down line look and we were showing A'Shaun and Jaron Reed as the two interior guys. I felt like we held the point of attack a little differently. There was one play that we saw that Brandon Ivory, you know, came through and not only shed his guy but made the tackle.
Yes.
And so that was good to see, and I hope that continues. I thought that Xavier Dixon, you know, had a quiet game as far as on the – as far as the eye catching, if you would. But I felt like that in a difficult game like this with 56 running plays, I felt like he did an adequate job of because he was undersized for this kind of attack.
Sure.
And I felt like he did a good job of holding the point of attack. And so he didn't fill up the stat sheet like he has been doing. But I thought that he did well. I was surprised that we didn't see much of the backups. We didn't see much Tim Williams. We didn't see Rashawn Evans. You know, Denzel Duvall got the start, and he got a lot of the snaps. I thought they would work him gradually back in. They put him right back in the rotation where he was before.
Yeah, they absolutely did. We saw much less of Ryan Anderson. And, you know, that again, that could be a function of this opponent. We want our bigger linebacker in there as opposed to maybe our quicker linebacker in there, helping to set that edge. And if we're going to play three down, then we want a beefier linebacker walking up on that ledge. And so, you know, almost more like a Hightower as opposed to, you know, somebody else. But, you know, I guess in that sense, I wasn't surprised. But yeah, it's good to see Denzel back. I'm definitely glad that he's back. I probably thought we would have eased him in a little bit, but this type of opponent, yeah, I can see where we would want his big body in there.
Hey, I do want to comment on Dalvin Tomlinson. Dalvin Tomlinson got some run in the rotation, just because there was so many offensive plays and so many two tight end fullback formations or I formations. I thought he had a good day. He had two tackles for loss and he didn't get a lot of snaps. And so I'd like him to get worked into that rotation instead of it being just the Jaron Reed, Brandon Ivory, A'Shaun Robinson show. I'd like Tomlinson to get some play in the interior and make it a four-person interior rotation.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, I want to throw a little love to Jonathan Allen. I think he had, a good day. Didn't necessarily fill up the stats, but he had a good tackle for loss, loss of 9 yards. So I'd, give him some credit, too. I think he had some good run. Again, it goes back to I think we have some numbers there on the defensive front. We needed the bigger, we're recruiting almost two types of defensive linemen. The big defensive tackles that we can load up on. And, you know, you take Jaron and Ivory and A'Shaun, you've got three massive defensive tackles that can play, and then we're getting more of the nimble defensive ends that sometimes we'll play them at the tackle positions depending upon the opponent. And so you've got some of those guys. We talked about Brandon Ivory and Lake, Darren Lake, getting more run than they have against any other team. Well, so that's sort of the other side of the coin when you look at Jonathan Allen and Tim Williams and some of the other guys getting a little less run because, you know, we're recruiting to two different types of opponent, and so the beefier guys got to play Saturday.
Oh, sure, and this ties back a little bit to your point about 2 years ago, the 88 offensive plays that LSU ran.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, we have more serviceable depth now on our front seven than we did 2 years ago. So as I look at the stat sheet and I see 21 defensive players who got defensive stats, not special teams, but defensive stats, 21 guys, right? You can only start 11. So hopefully that bodes well to having to have 82 plays on defense, that we do have more guys that got run, because you and I both know 2 years ago, we didn't have four or five interior defensive linemen that we felt comfortable playing. It was the Jesse Williams show.
Yeah, you know what? And that makes a great point. Let's kind of marry those two points together, right? Not only do we have more people, but they're diverse. We talked about, the big bodies versus the nimble bodies. We have some of each, and we played more of the big bodies because we played LSU, well, against Mississippi State and Dak Prescott were more likely to need more of the nimble bodies. And so you could say that, in, you know, the situation is very different now in that that's fine. We've exhausted our big bodies. We're going to need them, but we'll need them less. Now we can give a lot of run to the guys who did not play as much against LSU. And so maybe not only the numbers, but the types of numbers that we have helps us. So maybe Denzel Duvall doesn't need to play the whole game against Mississippi State. We can give Ryan Anderson some more of the run and kind of offset. Now, some guys we can't offset. Some guys, you know, Ragland's going to play. But
Tim Williams and Rashawn Evans rushing off the edge against Dak Prescott are going to be fresh because they didn't play much in this ball game.
Yep. So I think I do think that it's not just a bunch of more numbers, but it's the type of numbers that really maybe allow us to match up a little bit better. I'm saying that realizing that I probably have a little bit of hopefulness there. But, you know, we kind of look for, and this is what we do, right? We kind of look for, you know, some concepts and theories that that we have. And so I think there's an opportunity. I think we're better equipped for these kind of back-to-back games now than we were a couple years ago, even though a couple years ago maybe we had a better nose guard as a singular position. But I like our defensive front across the board better now.
Oh, no, absolutely. Hey, one other thing I want to mention real quick on defense is, you know, they had a quarterback who's obviously a running quarterback. He was 2 of 10 passing the ball in the first half. He finished the game 8 out of 26. We were sitting there running a dime defense with Trey DePriest as our sole linebacker. They were, in that third quarter, they were motioning the running back into the flats to take Trey out of the middle of the field. We had nobody within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, and they kept doing a design run on third and short and picking up subsequent first downs. And you and I were sitting here screaming at the TV saying, get a safety in the box, get Landon Collins in the box at the linebacker position and stop that crap. And sure enough, after the second or third time they did it, they adjusted and shut it down. And yeah. So I want to mention that real quick.
No, I think you're right. You know, we were playing a two deep shell with the safeties, and you know, the whole middle of the field was available for them to run, and why not take advantage of it? And certainly they did. We adjusted, you know, and it's a formation that we've talked about, moving Landon Collins in the box almost as if he's an outside linebacker, and it seemed to shut down that run, that quarterback run. Pretty quick, almost like turning off a faucet. You know, the opportunities that they had were much diminished. But it's surprising. Why would you run a two-deep shell on, you know, a second and short with a quarterback who's struggling to pass the ball? I just don't understand that. I get we'd rather err on, you know, let's keep the play in front of us. I do get that, but I don't know. I would have kept a single high, but I don't see going double too high in that situation.
How do you go too high on a quarterback that was 2 for 10 in the first half, right? How do you do that? He's not a passing quarterback. Before I forget, I want to say with 5 minutes left in the game, when I thought we had lost the game the first time, their stud freshman Fournette, they got the ball on the 33-yard line. First and 10, he rushes for 6 yards.
Yeah.
It is second and 4 at the 39. I'm like, crap, they just got 6 yards on first down, and now they got 3 downs to get 4 yards because you know that he's going to go for it on fourth down. Second and 4, they run the ball. Trey DePriest is in the middle of the defense. Landon Collins is 12 yards behind the line of scrimmage. He sees and anticipates, and he runs and gets to the hole before Trey DePriest does. And Trey DePriest has a 9-yard head start on him. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't wrap up, which I wish he did, but he does lower his helmet. And he thumps the guy for no gain. And I just wanted to comment that was a huge-ass play.
Sure.
On second and 4, and that they could have sat there and got a few first downs and kicked the game-winning field goal.
Yep.
Huge play.
I agree. You got anything else on defense, or you want to take us to mini game ball?
Man, there were so many great defensive plays. We could keep going, but we'll go ahead and go mini game ball here. You know, mini game ball, I'm going to steal yours now. I hope this is yours. If this isn't yours and you just scratch out your name and write this name, Jaron Reed deserves the mini game ball. He deserves the mini game ball of all mini game balls this season. When I went back and saw on the stat sheet that he had 2 solo tackles and 13 assists, I said this had to be a typo. Are you kidding me? A nose guard has 15 tackles and leads the stat sheet? That is freaking awesome. So then I went back and looked at another sheet. Jaron Reed only has 35 tackles on the year, and he got 15 of them in this LSU ball game. I get that they ran the ball up the middle 56 times. I get that. But still, without Jaron Reed, we lose this ball game. And we probably lose it by 10 points.
I love Jaron Reed. I am going a little more subtle on my mini game ball. I'm not going to the top of – you say I'm breaking it by giving it – you went to the top of the stat sheet and gave a mini game ball. So I'm
a nose guard. Come on, man. 15 tackles from a nose guard? Are you kidding me?
I love the kid.
That's never happened at Alabama. Never.
I'd go back to our recruiting show. I said he'd be a top 5 impact player. So you're just validating that content. But I'm going to go a little more subtle on my mini game ball. I am giving, and you probably know what I'm going to do here, I am giving my mini game ball to A'shaun Robinson for his acting on the personal foul on the first down after Yeldon's fumble. It was a fumble on the 6. And so you're talking about they're running at 6 yards a clip. Well, here's 4 downs on the 6 to get the touchdown that would have won the game. And on the first play, we stone the running back for no gain. And so there's some little bit of emotion there at the line of scrimmage. And Vidal Alexander, one of their better offensive linemen, gives a little bit of a shove to A'shaun Robinson. And A'shaun Robinson, you would have thought he got hit by a Mack truck because he flailed. And at one angle, it looked, you know, like, oh, yeah, you got to flag that. At another angle, it looked much less significant. But he did a little bit of a flail. The flags come out, personal foul. So now it's first. Second down on the 21-yard line. Second and goal on the 21-yard line, which is a different ball game. It's a different animal together, altogether. And so they had to LSU then had to kick a field goal. It was the go-ahead field goal. Still could have won them the game. But that gave us I think that sparked a little bit of confidence that, you know, we were able to hold them. And that's what Saban said. Hold them to a field goal. We're going to drive down and tie the game up. And so when things kind of come together, you know, you kind of buy in some confidence. And when that happened, we held them to a field goal. The offense said, okay, here's what we've got to go do, and they did it. If A'shaun doesn't help draw that flag, I think the outcome
is different. We lose the ball game.
Yep. So
we lose the ball game.
Yep. So I'm going deep cover there on my mini game ball. Because I told you, I said, look, we won't hear about this anywhere. The commentators aren't talking about it, but that's another play that we rewound a couple times. Yep. I think he's faking that one. And you know, I haven't read all the news articles that have been published, but I told you, look, we won't hear about this anywhere. And and if I'm wrong, send me the link because I want to read the article. But I've not seen it. I've not seen, you know, anyone mention it. And I think that's worthy of in fact, I've got an article coming out on Bama Hammer that's going to talk to it. And one of the things that I mentioned there is, you know, Daniel Moore's not going to paint a picture of A'shaun Robinson's, you know, flail in Death Valley. But without that play, I don't think we win this game.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
And wouldn't that be an awesome Daniel Moore print?
Oh, that would be. That would be indeed, man. The let's talk some special teams here. Where do you want to go first with special teams? You've been asking to see your punter. I'm tired of you asking to see your punter because you're getting what you asked for. And we better not see J.K. Scott for 9 punts, you know, combined in the next 3 ball games.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to see I didn't want to see 9 instances of him punting. But, you know, he averaged, you know, 48.5 yards across 9 punts. At one point, the commentators said that, you know, J.K.'s having a bad day. He's only averaging 42 yards. And you know, it's as funny as it sounds, because we had, you know, we've had heroes that they were averaging 42 yards out of the punter position. And so the fact that he had 9 for almost 47 is pretty darn impressive. I'd like to see 3 averaging 47, you know, instead of 9. But, you know, that's what we got. And he helped us flip the field a couple of times.
No, absolutely. Talk a little bit about Adam Griffith. You know, the decision to not have him come back out there and try a consecutive field goal after the short miss. What did you think about not having him come back out there at that point?
I thought at the time that it was the right thing to do. Doesn't have to be a knock on the kicker. I just think in a game like this, you're struggling to move the ball at all, and you have an opportunity to try to get a full touchdown. You could argue you take points when you can get them, and that's a fair argument too. But I think we desperately wanted the touchdown there, so I don't feel so bad about that. Adam Griffith, you know, to me is an enigma. There were parts of the season very early I was kind of nervous. What do we got? He made a lot of kicks, man. I thought this guy's money. He's had some little bit of time where I'm not sure how confident I am in him. He misses his first kick. We purposely make the decision for whatever reason not to put him out there the second time. And I tell you, I think the kid's going to lose his job. But then he comes out and hits 2 more field goals. And the one to tie the game was 7 seconds left. I don't know.
That's a pressure kick.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a kick with that much pressure that we've had this season, and he drilled it true, and it was an off angle, and you know all the different things that you could think to want to say about it. He nailed it, so you know, I guess next time he goes out there, I don't know how I'm gonna feel, but you know, he has demonstrated that he's capable of hitting some big kicks, so you got to give him a pat on the back. You know, 2 other things that I'd call out on special teams. It's never good when you know who the long snapper is. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because you and I are always going to know who the long snapper is. But when a long snapper sort of has his name called, it's never a good thing.
3 different times.
What's that?
3 different times.
Three.
Because he made 3 tackles.
Yeah, it's cute when the long snapper gets down there and does it once, because he's hustle. He's always down near the ball. Because he's actually kind of the first one off the ball sometimes, you know, running.
He has
down
nobody in front of him.
Right. And so, you know, and it's cute when he does it, you know, once a month. But, you know, 3 tackles, I thought that was a little much. It's not his fault. I'm not mad at him. But I think there's some coverage things to talk about there. But
yes.
I'll say this, and we both commented on this, and you were a little more negative.
Steal my thunder, man. I know you are. Go ahead.
Well, then you take it. You take it. You know where I'm going.
You going Reuben Foster?
You got to go Reuben Foster.
Man, go ahead. I'll let you go with it. I'll pile on in a minute. Go ahead.
No, I just think that, you know, he's got to see what his tackling. I wish he would correct himself there. But when he laid the wood to Fournette on that kick return and just stopped him cold, Reuben Foster must be a very popular player on the team, because when he makes a big play, everybody on the roster celebrates with him. And so when he made, you know, anybody could have made a big hit there and it would have been nice, but there was just a little extra mustard to him making that play, and that just sort of inciting the whole team, the whole roster. And we kind of kidded that this might be the spark. This might be the spark. And there's a part of me that thinks that it was.
I'm going to tell you that if Jaron Reed had not had 13 assisted tackles, I was going to give Reuben Foster my game ball from special teams on defense because of that play.
Sure.
Because you and I didn't get to be there live, so we didn't get to see the sideline action that we read about. But There is a lot of people.
We saw on the field. We did see what they showed, and it was it was bigger than just woohoo, big tackle.
It was pronounced. It was. It was pronounced like he had done at the home games, right?
Yes.
And so I do think there is something to be said that that definitely was a spark. And Saban even said that he was trying to give some in his post-game press conference. He talked about excitement. I'm trying to give these guys some excitement. I'm going up and down the field. I'm trying to get the assistant coaches to get some life in things. I think Reuben Foster inserted some life into this team that they did not have at a very critical moment with 3 seconds left in regulation.
Yeah, and can do it in a way a fellow player can do it in a way that a coach can't. A coach is trying to give you motivation. A player makes a play like that, and the wellspring of motivation within each of the individual players sort of kicks on. It's a different kind of motivation. And I do think it was a spark. I do think it fired up the team. And sort of how long that sort of persisted, I don't know. But sometimes that can feed upon itself. You know, one good play gets another good play gets another good play. And I think it was big.
It was very big. And real quick, put him in your category of players people are going to forget about. 5-star stud, number one player in the country. Could have gone to Auburn, comes to Alabama. When he gets the whole skill set of being a linebacker, watch out.
Yeah.
This kid will make an impact before he's done.
I hope so. And we've talked about that. So, I definitely hope so. I like what he's doing on special teams, though. anything else you want to cover, or you want to jump to?
No, man, let's jump to Mississippi State, man. I'm nervous about this game now. I felt really good about this game prior to this LSU ball game, but now we get to face Tim Tebow Jr. This kid, when I've gotten to watch a few of their games, he's running through the middle of the defense. These DBs aren't tackling with their arms; they're just trying to bounce off of him. And they're truly bouncing off of him like little kids.
Sure.
And this guy has shown that he is a better passing quarterback now than he was. He's still not your pocket presence quarterback. But this is a challenge that we have not – this is a combination of skill set that we have not seen this year. And this is not – you know, I'd rather be playing these guys after a bye or after a Western Carolina than playing this particular team after LSU right now.
Yeah, we've got, this home stretch that we've got, you know, 4 games. And, you know, fortunately, you know, we've got to win them all. And so we won LSU. You know, we've got 3 left, and, you know, Mississippi State and Auburn are 2 of them. We've still got our work cut out for us. But and that's why I think for all the rankings and everybody's sort of getting their panties in a wad about not being in the top 4 and all that stuff, man, let's just go to work every day, because that Final Four will take care of itself if we take care of what we need to take care of. I mean, we'll be skyrocketed right up near the top of the list. So let's just do what we need to do, and we'll be right there where we need to be. But yeah, this Mississippi State team, you know, they're tough, they're physical. They played us tough last year in Starkville. I think we were a little flat. I think we need to have the appropriate amount of emotion for this game. I think it's significant to come back and play this game in Tuscaloosa. If we were in Starkville next week, I don't know that we would win that game, just to be blunt. But coming back to Tuscaloosa with the emotion, our team plays so much better in Tuscaloosa. I think that we will win the game. I just think it's going to be a hard-fought game. It might be a 24-17, 24-20 type of ball game. But I do think we pull this one out. It's just another nail-biter type game. I'm just glad this one's in Tuscaloosa.
No, absolutely, man. I get to hear less of those damn cowbells that drive me crazy. that's kudos in itself. No, Mississippi State, man, this is an interesting opponent. They got a big physical offensive line. They've got two really good running backs. One's a bowling ball, low center of gravity.
Yep.
Who's made some phenomenal runs. They don't have the big physical, 6'5", 240-pound wide receiver matchup. So that's good that we don't have to worry about that. I really think what's going to help us the most in this ball game is what you said earlier about different skill sets. The fact that we can run a Jonathan Allen and a DJ Pettaway out there 1 minute and a Tim Williams and a Rashawn Evans around the edge to his blind side on 3rd and 10, we're going to need all these hosses. And I think the fact that we can run all this stuff at him makes me feel a little bit better about this.
If we'll do it, I mean, you're naming names that we know are on the roster. We know what, or at least we think we know what they're capable of. They don't always play a whole lot. And so if we will do that to mix it up, I think that it will go a long way. It's one thing to give different looks. Are they in a nickel? Are they in a, four DBs? Did they go to dime? But it's a whole nother sort of level to think about the different looks that we can give across the defensive front. You know, they're in their, beef package. They're in their rabbit package. They're in this really get after them attack mode package in terms of getting after the quarterback. I think we have a lot of versatility there. And if we will use it, and I think that we will, but if we use it, that'll give Dak a lot more to think about there at the line of scrimmage.
Well, I just want to put pressure on him. I want to make him make decisions very quickly. I don't want to sit back. I'd like to see some press man on the corners, and I'd like us to come with 6 and come with 7 and just do some sellout blitzes. I really want us to go after him and make him make the perfect decision very quickly.
What kind of score prediction you got for this?
Man, I think this is going to be one of those games that is going to be very low scoring early. It's going to, we're going to have to get a touchdown in the fourth quarter to put this game on ice. I think this is going to be like a 20-13 ball game, or maybe even 20-16. Alabama scores a touchdown in the fourth quarter to come back and win this one. I really think this is going to be that close.
Okay. All right.
That's all right. No, man, I'm ready to get past this one. I'm ready for Western Carolina and get some guys healthy again for Auburn. I will say very quickly that I'm glad to hear that Brian Vogler was held back in this game and didn't play much by design. Coach said that he's looking better today. I think we're really going to need him in this running game, and so I look forward to seeing him back out there for Mississippi State.
Yeah, I want this to be a long, restful week. If the athletic department's chauffeuring all the players to class with golf carts, I don't have a problem with that.
I hear you, man.
Very good. Hey, I want to do something. We do this every time that we get to, and I'm glad that we get to. But we got a new review on iTunes, and so I want to share that with everyone. Another 5-star review. These are flattering and encouraging when they come. These guys are good. This is Chip Whalenmeyer. He says he's stationed over here in Italy. And so I just want to pause right there. That starts to sound like military. We've gotten a number of comments kind of over the years that are military. And so I just want to give a tip of the hat to the veterans out there. Thank you for what you do. But stationed here in Italy, I only get one shot to watch Alabama play, and it's usually about 2 a.m. Needless to say, while I'm there for each and every game, I sometimes miss some of the nuances that I might usually catch. These guys do a fantastic job of breaking down the game and giving me all the things to look for so I can watch improvements or concerns that our team has. Thank you guys for what you do. Gives me a little slice of home. Again, that's very flattering. And he says this is a must-have podcast for the serious Alabama fan. So, Chip, we greatly appreciate it. We greatly appreciate your service, as with all of the veterans. Thank you for that. And I just encourage you guys, if you enjoy what we're doing here, we certainly thank you for that. Go to iTunes. If you look in iTunes, We're the number one ranked podcast for Alabama football, which is fantastic. But if you look under college football, which is a much broader topic, we're kind of bouncing around 13, 14, kind of in that area. And that's very flattering with some of the competition that's out there and some of it that that we're performing very well against. But if you want to help us, go leave us a review, because that factors into the metrics that iTunes has and how they rank shows, is the type of reviews and feedback that people are getting. So if you like what we're doing, go leave us an authentic review. Tell us what you think, and that can help boost us in the ratings, and maybe some additional folks will find us. So we'll appreciate what you do there. But yeah, a long, restful week for the team, and get ready to face the bullies of Mississippi State. CBS game on Saturday. With that, that's another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast powered by Bama Hammer. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.